The Michael Duke Show.
I have two guns, one for each of you.
Firearms Friday.
As Thomas Jefferson stated, it is the right and duty of the people to be at all times armed.
To be at all times armed.
Say hello to my little friend!
I say that the Second Amendment is, in order of importance, the First Amendment. The right to keep and bear arms is the one right that allows rights to exist at all.
The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Not be infringed. Firearms.
From my cold, dead hands.
Friday.
Here's my rifle, where's my gun?
This is for fun, and it's for fun.
Firearms Friday.
Firearms Friday, right here on The Michael Duke Show. Broadcasting live across the state of Alaska on this, your favorite radio station and or translator, and around the world at MichaelDukeShow.com on the interwebs. Hello, my friends, and how are you? You ready to dive into this? My favorite day of the week. Yes, my favorite day. This is my two-hour therapy session. That's what it's all about. It's two hours of delicious gun therapy. Hanging out in my virtual green room, drinking my virtual coffee, and eating my virtual donuts is the busy guy we know as Rob Pincus. Not only is he the vice president of Avidity Arms, the executive director of the Personal Defense Network, the owner of the ICE Training Company, he's also the executive vice president of 2AO.org. That's the Second Amendment organization. He also works with Michael Sodini over there at Walk the Talk America, and he is one of those guys that's out there in the gun culture all the time, kind of breaking trail. And we appreciate him coming on board with us this morning. Good morning, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. This is we're heading into the last month of the Personal Defense Network training tour. The 2021 tour is back at it again. Of course, last year, we, like everybody else, took a little bit of a corona pause on the travel and the training on the ranges. But we've got nine instructors all over the country. I'm going to be teaching in Washington State. I'll be at an event in Tennessee, opening a range with MJ's Firearms. And then I'll be teaching in New Jersey. So all next week, I'll be coast to coast. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, you know, that is kind of weird because it's odd because you are so used to last year. We all talk about how, we were so tired of being shut in. But for you, it must have been really weird because you travel like constantly. It must have been harder than for the average Joe who just went back and forth to a 9-to-5 job somewhere.
I'll tell you what, the thing that's been missing is Europe and international travel. The fact is I didn't stand still. I stayed in my apartment in Denver for 27 hours once last summer just to say I quarantined so I could, you know, be part of those conversations in a decade. So I got my one day in. And other than that, I really kept moving. You know, I've got a place in Florida and a place in Colorado. So I was back and forth. I was doing a lot of road trips. I was seeing friends and family. I did start teaching again in June. So I really only took about six, seven, eight weeks off, maybe max from teaching classes, but we're still doing things with Personal Defense Network. And I've got enough projects and things in different parts of the country and people who weren't worried about being locked down in my life that I kept moving. And so I didn't really get, that sort of quarantine lockdown fatigue that I know a lot of people had to suffer through because their lifestyle is different. But it was the first year. This is now I'm 14 months since I've been out of the country, except for one quick trip to Mexico. And it is different. So I'm looking forward to getting back to teaching over in Europe and traveling around again more normally for me this fall.
Right. Now, I'm a pretty busy guy, but you make me feel slovenly. I mean, I work a lot of hours, and I just every time I think about your schedule, I'm like, whew, baby. All right. Well, I wanted to bring you on today for a couple reasons. One, you and I are of like mind on this. I made this commentary earlier this week when I saw this story about Remington and their offer to settle this Sandy Hook lawsuit. The morning that it came out, I don't normally touch on firearms topics during the week, but I was so I felt it was urgent that I bring that out. I said, this is, sets a horrible precedent. We have a real problem here because you've already got the NPCLAA, which is a federal law protecting gun manufacturers from liability for an illegal misuse of their lawful product. And you've got all these things going on. Now, I know it's probably because Remington is in bankruptcy and they've just got a bunch of bankruptcy attorneys who don't care about the gun culture at all. And they just want it to go away so they can finish what they're doing. But this sets a horrible precedent. And lo and behold, yesterday or day before, you posted and said exactly the same thing. So I know we're of like mind on this. Give me your thoughts on what's going on.
Yeah, for those that don't know, Remington, the company, has been in and out of financial troubles and more or less on the brink of complete failure for a long time. They've had a bunch of missteps with firearms releases and just not now. Now they're officially in bankruptcy, and they have offered $33 million to, I believe it's 9 families that lost people during the Sandy Hook attacks. And the problem with that is, as you said, we all understand the landscape of lawyer world and stuff where people will settle because they do the math and they say, look, we can give them $33 million or we can spend $50 million in court. And even if we win, we've lost financially. Well, the problem is sometimes it's worth paying the price to fight the right fight on principle because of the precedent and the message that gets sent. So when it's left to insurance companies and lawyers, as I believe we have that situation right now, no one who cares about the fundamental integrity of the principles involved in protecting the Second Amendment and protecting firearms manufacturers' rights to do business without regard in a legal liability way for people misusing their product willfully, which is obviously what happens when someone murders someone with a gun, whether it's a mass killing or an individual killing, that's a misuse of the product. And all of us in the gun community care about that. I'm sure the executives at Remington care about it. I'm sure the lawyers care about that. No one wants to see murders occur with their product, whether it's a hammer, a car, or a gun.
Right.
These are things I think about with Avidity Arms, or things I think about with the guns that I 3D print, not wanting them to get into the wrong hands, not wanting them to be misused. But that does not create a financial liability in my mind or legally. And this offer, which goes around the Protection Act, is really, really a dangerous precedent, just if nothing else, philosophically, in the United States right now.
Well, you know, I totally agree. I mean, we've likened this, you know, for folks that aren't really familiar with this whole battle over the NCPLAA and why it was put into place. By the way, voted for, you know, Hillary Clinton was a senator and voted for it. Bernie Sanders voted for it. I mean, there was a lot of bipartisan support for this bill because it makes sense. I've often likened it to a guy who, you know, takes a liter of Jack Daniels, drinks it down, climbs into a Ford pickup truck, and then later on plows into a group of church, you know, kids or something, and then saying, well, we're going to sue Ford Motor Company and we're going to sue Jack Daniels for the illegal use of these products. Now, that would never happen because it doesn't make sense. It's not Ford Motor Company's problem that somebody illegally used their product. You know, nobody sued Ford for the white Bronco run from O.J. Simpson, but it happened all the time with the gun manufacturers. That's where this law came from. They're legally producing a product. People are, you know, 99.9% of Americans are using it legally. Just because 0.1% or 0.2% use it illegally doesn't make them liable. And that's what this all comes about. But this is a way to end run the fact that anti-gun folks can't get legislation passed that they want. And this is a way to try and, again, death by a thousand cuts, kill the firearms industry.
It really is. And it's like, yeah, there is this moral and ethical sort of quandary, right? Like, so I sometimes take a lot of static. We've talked about some of the issues that I get myself into when I say things like, yeah, I do believe it is the responsibility of every gun owner to prevent unauthorized access. I think that we should take the right steps to prevent people who will do malicious, willful, evil acts with a firearm from getting their hands on our firearms. Does that mean if someone takes a cutting torch and gets into one of my safes and takes that gun and murders somebody on the other side of town that I should be held responsible? No, it does not. Does it mean I'll feel bad? Yes.
Is
that why I put cameras on my safe so that no one's going to have theoretically the time and access to that safe to be able to cut it open with a torch? These are the steps that I take because I think they're my moral responsibility.
Right.
I do not think that connotes a legal responsibility or liability when things go wrong in this case. And that's the difference. And we have to be able to talk about this intelligently. We can't say that we have no responsibility around firearms use as part of the firearms industry, but we also can't cave to the financial or political or legal expediency of, let me just pay you off so that I can move on with my bankruptcy if I'm in Remington's shoes, because this carries a lot of weight and this will set a precedent that is very, very dangerous for us. Remember, Remington had another problem that haunted them for decades on over the issue of them knowingly putting out a product which had a safety which the engineers at Remington were concerned about, the Remington 700 trigger safety.
Right.
People were worried about that trigger system decades before it finally was admitted and came out in public, and they did a recall, massive recall, on one of the most popular rifles ever made. So Remington has been through the ringer in a lot of different ways over the last couple of decades, but this is a horrible, horrible misstep for the entire community.
Absolutely. And again, I think, you know, we keep hitting this, but I think it's important, the precedent. If Remington folds on this, then the next time there is some kind of mass shooting or maybe even past mass shootings, they may be emboldened to then go back against those gun manufacturers and say, well, Remington ponied up, and those gun manufacturers can cling to the federal law protecting them. But at some point, it's going to become a battle of hearts and minds for the public to be like, well, Remington ponied up, why won't you? And that's part of the problem.
Exactly. And remember, this is specifically not about the way the gun was made. It's not about what the gun was capable of. This is all about the marketing. They're actually being sued over the idea that their marketing somehow contributed to the mindset of the killer that went and massacred children in a classroom at the Sandy Hook school. And I can't think of anything that, I mean, there are some ludicrous things that we get accused of in the gun community. This is one of the most outlandish attempts to just vilify the gun community, to suggest that anything Remington, or at that time it was Bushmaster, which they owned, I think, was the deal, the Bushmaster advertising somehow equated to you should go kill children in a classroom,
right,
is idiotic.
Right.
And yet here we are seeing a settlement over that lawsuit.
Yeah, it's very troubling. And you know, I kind of hope that in one way, I hope that the people, you know, the folks involved in this and the lawyers involved in this are maybe they're incensed. It's not enough. I hope that they decline it so that it continues on. But I just don't know what's going to happen. But it does. It is going to be interesting to see how this plays out in the future. So we'll keep our fingers crossed on that. Second thing that I want to talk about, well, I got a couple other things that I want to talk about, but we're coming up on the break. So let me just tease the next one. I talked about this last week, but it's great news for the Czech Republic. And I know you're a huge fan. Like you were just saying earlier, you like to go out of the country. You like to go into Europe. The Czech Republic has been very gun friendly for many years, but it just got better. And I know you were doing a little bit of a happy dance about this the other day. So we're going to talk about that when we get back. Folks, we're up against the break. We got more coming up. It is Rob Pincus joining us. He is the vice president of the Second Amendment Org, also Avidity Arms. He's with the Personal Defense Network, wears a lot of hats, does a lot of stuff in the gun community. We're proud to have him here on the program this morning. Back with more. Don't go anywhere. The Michael Duke Show continues right after this.
We're broadcasting live through a series of tubes,
allowing all of these entities to provide streaming stuff going on the internet.
Well, it's kind of hard to explain. Sorry. Streaming live every weekday morning on Facebook Live and MichaelDukesShow.com.
Okay, we're in the break right now. Rob Pincus is our guest. Rob and, you know, 30 of our closest friends here in the Facebook chat room here this morning hanging out. If you want to ask Rob a question, now is the time to do it here during the commercial break. You can ask him all kinds of questions. So, Rob, give us a rundown. What's coming up for the remainder of the summer for you overall? What else are you working on? Anything you want to give us a sneak peek at?
Well, the big thing that's coming up in August, and I think I remember we talked about this idea of gun making and private gun making.
Oh, yeah.
3D printing.
Oh, yeah.
And the gun makers match. So the gun makers match, the first one happened in June. It was a great success. It was an awesome day. People can go to gunmakersmatch.com and see some of the media, the articles and the videos. Michael Bain did a great 1-hour segment of his Triggered online show all about it. He attended the event. Stephen Gutowski wrote a couple pieces for his new publication, The Reload. So there's a lot of good information out there about what happened on June 19th. But on August 22nd, we're doing the first follow-up, a regional match, handgun only in Denver, Colorado, for kit-built guns, your Polymer 80s and things like that, or 3D printed handguns. So we're going to be doing that. We're doing an educational day. The Firearms Policy Coalition is one of our sponsors for the Gun Makers Match, and they have specifically asked us to put on educational events concurrent with the competitions to help other people understand how they can get into gun making. So we're doing that at the Triple J Armory in Denver on August 21st is the educational summit. And then we'll talk about 3D printing and kit building. And then on the 29th, we're going to do that handgun competition. So we're looking forward to that as well.
That's going to be great. Yeah. I mean, the maker space is so full right now. I've been following some of this stuff, Control Alt Pew, and some of the other people who've been putting together some amazing files of various things. I have been eyeing a SLA printer here for a bit. I've been doing mostly resin printing, which is not useful for gun making. But I'm looking at SLA printing as well, and I've been thinking about getting a unit and breaking into this, because it just looks like it is such an amazing hobby, and fits right up my alley, quite honestly.
It really is. That's one of the upsides of the extra time from the corona pause, was that I was able to really figure out this whole 3D printing thing and get into it. And it's great. I've got a printer in Florida. I've got two printers in Colorado now. One of them is being upgraded. The other one's up and running. And, you know, there are some people doing some interesting things now with resin printers inside of the Are We Cool Yet? The AWCY group, there are some developers who've been working on some handgun kits, handgun files and frames around resin printing. So it really is. It's happening and developing super fast. And there's a lot going on, and it's relatively easy. I mean, for less than $300, you can get into the hobby and be printing your own gun frames. So
yeah,
that's pretty cool.
No. And especially with some of the new, because I've been experimenting with new resins, some of these new ABS like kind of flexible, non-brittle, flexible resins, and they are pretty tough. I mean, they're getting to the point to where you could create something that would be, and now that the new printers are coming out, I was looking at a new resin printer the other day that's got a print bed that's 10 inches across. So you can definitely print an entire hand frame. The only challenge would be, does it have the flexibility and the rigidity, both the mix of the two, to be able to take the stresses and tolerances of that? So I'm definitely looking at all the different options, and it is. Now, again, remind me, what brand of SLA printer are you using?
I'm using an Ender 5. I have a Ender 5 that is upgraded to Pro. I've got two that are Ender 5 Pros. And really, the big difference is the quote unquote silence. And I was a little skeptical that it was going to make a difference, but the silent boards really do make a difference if you're going to be printing anywhere outside of a workshop or an industrial setting. If you're in your home, in a spare room, or in a home office, you really want to get that silent board. It makes a big difference when you're running 24 and 30 hour prints for some of the larger prints.
Yeah, no, they can be a little loud. So it's good to know. So, all right. Well, folks want to find out more about that. I know Rob has been posting about that, and there's a couple other groups, Control Alt Pew, and then the what was the one you just mentioned? Because I don't think I'm a member of that one.
Aussie, Are We Cool Yet? If you follow Aussie Arms, I think it's AWCY_Arms. There are co-producers of the event, along with Guns for Everyone National, of these gun makers matches, and they're one of the many development groups that really are working on some amazing files and manipulating and modifying and improving each other's files. And they were a community that welcomed me in late last year, early this year, when I started really getting into 3D printing and looking for good information. Another place to go is DefCAD, defcad.com, to get the files. Of course, that's Cody Wilson's organization, and Cody Wilson attended the Gun Makers Match, and he was interviewed in a lot of the media that people will see there. He's been very supportive of what we're doing, both through his DefCAD and through Ghost Gunner and the Legio fraternity. And then the other place people can go is the Gatalog. So you think like the GAT, you know, GAT, Gatalog.com is a great place to see all sorts of files from a wide variety of developers and development groups.
All right, we'll hold the line here. We're jumping back into it. Rob Pincus is our guest, The Michael Duke Show, Common Sense, Liberty-Based, Free Thinking Radio. Continuing now with Rob Pincus, Vice President of 2AO.org. He joins us today. We've been talking about the Remington lawsuit and the settlement offer. Now we're going to move on overseas. Rob, as he mentioned earlier, spends a lot of time out of the country, usually, doing training with various organizations. And we touched on this last week. The Czech Republic has, you know, welcome to the Free Nations of the World Club. The Czech Republic has decided to amend their constitution. And it's really some good news. Rob, you're excited about this. This is one of your favorite places to go.
It is. You know, I've been teaching over there. I think the first trip I took to the Czech Republic was probably 2008. And they were the last place I was. I actually came back as they were sort of shutting the borders down. I got back here early March last year from the Czech Republic. And I've worked with FK Brno over there and I've worked with the Czech police. I've run on several civilian classes there. It's really one of my favorite places on earth. And it's not just the people and the environment and the history and the food and the culture. They have a strong, very strong firearms culture. It is also the way they run their country, the way they've run their country since they've come out from behind the Iron Curtain.
Right.
They are a freedom-loving people, and it's a different spin. There is a taste of socialism that we wouldn't tolerate here in the U.S. that goes on over there. And there's more bureaucracy, as we can imagine, in a European state. But they just joined the United States with a protection for the ownership of a weapon. And what I love about it is specifically in their constitution now, it will be enacted next month. It's passed all through all the bureaucracy. And what they specifically are focused on is the right to use a weapon for personal defense. And I think that's huge. And I've said that a lot of times. Obviously, the United States is the greatest country in the world, and we've got the best in the original protection for gun rights in our Constitution. But that asterisk that always haunts us is this issue of the militia, right?
Right.
And this issue of the why people are allowed to own guns. And the Czechs went straight to the point and said, people are entitled to defend themselves, including with the use of weapons. And that's the way they're putting it in their constitution. And I think it's a great move for freedom. And again, a regaining of lost rights happening on Earth somewhere other than the U.S., which is great to see.
Now, this has some interesting geopolitical ramifications, and that's not normally something that I dig into on this show. We mostly focus on Alaska issues. But since we're in the gun world, there are interesting geopolitical issues with this, because as members of the European Union, the European Union has overriding rules and laws and everything else about gun rights. They do not want the citizens of the European Union to be armed in any way, shape, or form. And this kind of butts right up against that.
And this is very similar. You know, I say it all the time. People that don't spend a lot of time in Europe and the U.S. want to make Europe all one thing. And people who don't spend a lot of time in the United States that are over in Europe want to make the United States one thing. And it's really not, right? Our federalist system, look at what Texas is doing with the suppressors. They are trying a new way of saying inside of our state boundaries, federal law regarding suppressors doesn't apply. And we want our citizens, our citizens and residents of the state of Texas, to be able to exercise their right to keep and bear arms in a way that allows them to have suppressors that aren't falling under the NFA. Now, we know that a lot of people in other states, Kansas is one, where people have actually been charged with federal felonies because the federal government has come in and said, no, we don't care what your state law is.
Right.
We're going to enforce federal law here. And that's really what you've got inside of the European Union. You've got the Czech state saying, we don't care about we in fact do care so much that we're going to protect our citizens' rights to have weapons to defend themselves. And if the European Union wants to try to come in and enforce your federal laws, if you want to look at it that way, go ahead and try. But we aren't going to have any laws here inside of our borders, and we consider ourselves an autonomous state, at least on this issue. And there's a lot of, again, bureaucracy and red tape and somewhat confusion around the issues of the European Union. Some of them are financial. Some of them are border crossing and free movement and immigration and emigration. And then some of them are broader issues of law and common defense. And that's where this is going to become an issue, I'm sure, for the Czech Republic. But they've been fighting this fight for independence in terms of firearms ownership and usage inside of their country for a long time. And obviously, they're dedicated to that fight on behalf of, you know, all freedom lovers and independent people inside of Europe. They're definitely the leaders in this area. So I applaud them for taking this step. I understand that there are issues around it, but there are issues in the United States very, very similar when we talk about legalization of marijuana, or we talk about the legalization of suppressors inside of a state boundary. We talk about All of these issues of states' rights versus the country and the federal law, that's what the Czech Republic is dealing with in terms of the European Union.
Well, and this is an interesting point because we're seeing this happen across the country. And I think, you know, the general feeling is, and I think from gun controllers, is there's a little bit of desperation going on here because they're seeing this trend where, I mean, there was a poll in California here recently showing that Californians are souring on gun control. We keep seeing people like the ACLU tweeting that the Second Amendment is inherently racist, ignoring not only the fact that freed black Americans at the founding of the Constitution, and there were free black Americans, were entitled to the same rights as whites, and that gun control was really about, was more about racial segregation and keeping black populations under control in the South. I mean, they ignore all of that law. And then you saw, again, the COVID and the unrest, and you saw that the majority of new gun owners were minorities and women and people who historically would not be considered gun owners. I think you're seeing this fundamental shift, and it's starting to really worry people. And this is, again, this thing in the Czech Republic is the same kind of feeling where people are just like, we just want to take care of ourselves. I think that's starting to become more prevalent in the United States.
I think in the United States and around the world. I mean, look what's happening in Cuba. We've seen what's happening in Hong Kong. There are places on earth other than the U.S. where people yearn for freedom. And obviously there are places in the U.S. where we don't have nearly as much freedom as we would like. On the other side of that coin is the people on the planet of Earth who are perfectly comfortable with the idea of giving up their responsibility, giving up their autonomy, and trusting the government to take care of them and through controls. And what they perceive, I think, as controls on the other people in the country and compromises they're willing to make. Well, those lines are being drawn somewhat starkly in some ways around countries in the case of the European Union or around states in the United States. And I think the biggest danger that we have to our freedom-loving way in the United States is the people that are willing to say, you know what, I don't care about New Jersey anymore. I don't care about California anymore. I don't care about New York anymore. I'm happy with the way Idaho is or Alaska is or Texas is. Well, a lot of people would have been happy with the way Nevada was a decade ago and couldn't imagine that we would see something like this draconian anti-gun making, anti-private gun ownership law that just went into effect there. But people would have thought that Virginia was a good place for freedom and individual responsibility and gun ownership until about 5 or 6 years ago. So the danger is that by sort of yielding to, well, we don't care about New York as long as we have Texas and Arizona, I think that's really, really dangerous thinking. And we need to get, and as you said, the polls in California show a shift. We know about what the compliance rates have been like in New Jersey or in Connecticut or in New York when it comes to turn this in or register that. So I think it's important that we continue to maintain the pressure there. And that's why I'll be teaching in New Jersey coming up in about 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks, because I think it's important to go into those states. I taught in New York about a month ago, 6 weeks ago. It's really important to keep spending time in those states celebrating the Second Amendment and working with those who fight a lot harder, quite frankly, on a day-to-day basis than someone in Texas or Alaska or Florida right. to exercise those rights.
You were just talking about Nevada, and of course, that's really at the forefront here. Their AB 286, which is an anti-gun-making bill, and they call them, of course, ghost guns, which is what you and I were talking about during the break, which, of course, is make the makerspace where people are printing, 3D printing their own frames or manufacturing or milling their own frames and then putting kits together based on this. A federal judge on Monday rejected an attempt to block the enforcement of that. The Firearms Policy Coalition was fighting that along with several other folks. And this is a big deal because one of the largest, you know, 80% receiver companies in the U.S., Polymer 80, is based in Nevada. I think this is really going to be the next battlefront for gun rights, in my opinion, is this makerspace where people have been allowed forever to make their own guns. People just didn't know about it. Now it's finally starting to get a little press and not necessarily in a good way.
Right. And again, I remember it was on the break, but for those who weren't tuning in on Facebook, we did talk about gunmakersmatch.com and the things that we're doing with Polymer 80 and Firearms Policy Coalition and Brownells and JSD Supply and a lot of these great companies like Ghost Gunner and Defcad that are deep into helping people exercise their right to keep and bear arms through gun making, gun modifying, gun smithing. You know, Brownells has been doing it for many decades, 50 right. years, they've right. been helping people build guns in their homes and modify guns, fix guns, repair guns, make guns better. And that's an important part of our Second Amendment activity, I think. And Firearms Policy Coalition has referred to the gun making space as the bleeding edge of gun control issues right now in the country, using Nevada as the ultimate example. I mean, that law is so draconian. You know, at least in California, they said, look, you can make your own gun. You just have to register it with us. You have to get a serial number like a manufacturer would have to.
Right.
Now, that's not cool. But look at Nevada. Nevada has said you can't even own a kit or you're a felon. If you have a gun that you've made in the past, get rid of it, register it, or you're a felon. And no, you cannot buy a kit. You cannot buy gun parts. You cannot make anything moving forward, or you're a felon. And I think that's what's going to get them in trouble ultimately in federal court. Now, I know the injunction failed, so technically that law is in place, but it certainly is going to be challenged and is being challenged by Firearms Policy Coalition and others. And I believe that we're going to see that that change for the better. I'd like to see it go away entirely and maybe make it up to the Supreme Court, where it sets a nice precedent so that other states don't try to do the same thing.
Right. Well, and I think you mentioned the compliance rates, and I think that will be, as a fly on the wall, that would be the most interesting thing for me to watch. I mean, the New York Safe Act had less than a 2% compliant rate based on a lot of the publishing and reporting that people are talking about. And so how many gun owners are basically going to say, screw you, we're just going to do what we, you know, and that's the problem. We're down to 2 minutes here, but see, that's the danger. You start passing laws that make no sense, that fly directly in the face of common sense and freedom. People will start ignoring those laws, and then you've got the danger of creating an Irish democracy where people basically just start to disregard all laws because it makes no sense to them. That's a dangerous precedent to set.
It is. And that's, you know, we know how that turned out in the 1920s with Prohibition. It didn't work out really well. It was one of the biggest missteps of populism gone awry in the U.S., where there was a movement to get rid of alcohol and make alcohol illegal. It swept through the country. It was ratified as an amendment, and it was disastrous. And I think that honestly, if they could have done it in the 90s, if they could have done it after Sandy Hook, the anti-gunners, the anti-freedom movement that focuses on gun control, they would have swept the Second Amendment away if they could have. And obviously that would have disastrous consequences, probably more disastrous consequences than alcohol prohibition did in the United States. And we just have to keep reminding them, through whether it's through noncompliance or better, at the voting booth and at the town square and at the coffee shops and at our workplaces, that no, honestly, Americans don't have a taste for draconian gun control in any way. We understand that freedom is dangerous and we're willing to take the risks. And we really just need to focus on education and responsibility, not legislation.
Rob Pincus, Personal Defense Network, 2AO.org, Walk the Talk America, Avidity Firearms. My friend, thank you so much for taking the time out today for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
All right. Hold the line for 1 second, Rob. Folks, we're out of time. The Michael Duke Show continues. Hour two dead ahead. We're opening up the phone lines for gun Q&A. Up next, answering your questions on the Pivotel call-in line. Back with more right after these messages. Okay, in the break, Rob, I just wanted to give you one final bite at the apple in case there was something we didn't hit on or other some other topic you wanted to bring up or, you know, let people know about real quick before I let you go. I wanted to just give you the final word, so to speak.
Hey, man, I appreciate it. As always, I appreciate your time and sharing some of my thoughts with your audience. You do a great job of keeping people apprised of what's going on. I know you focus on Alaska, but you also have a lot of reach through social media and otherwise to influence the conversation. So thank you for your work. I'm excited again about this first regional gun makers match. I'm excited to find out that you're looking at doing some additive development. Maybe we're going to see some of your prints and designs in the near future. You know, I'm overdue for a trip to Alaska. So if you ever want to try to get together and up there and do a listener sort of featured or focused class,
yeah,
let's get that on the books. It's been a few years since I taught up there, so let's work on that. Let's try to find a range, and we'll do a Firearms Friday. Maybe I could even join you in the studio and a on the range classroom Saturday.
That would be fantastic, Rob. I would appreciate that. So let's start talking about that and get that done. And good luck. Where the makers match is in Colorado.
Yeah, so this handgun match is going to be what our intention is, to continue to do regional matches during the year, but then have the one big annual event, so that the second annual event, it will be in March back in Florida. But with our first regional event is going to be in Denver, Colorado at Triple J Armory on August 22nd. And we're looking at doing an event in the Midwest this fall and probably in the Southwest either Nevada or Arizona. We're going to try to do an event. Now, the laws in Nevada right now are screwing us up, but I'd love to see a court get involved and give us a reason to celebrate and do something there by next winter or spring. But if not, we'll probably end up doing something in Arizona or maybe even California as we look at February before the big national event again in, down in Florida in March.
Well, I better get my poop in a group here and see if I can put all this together in time to do something for early part of next year. All right.
Get on it, man.
All right, Rob. Well, thank you, my friend. Have a great weekend. Enjoy yourself.
You too. Take care.
All right. Rob Pincus, our guest, Personal Defense Network, 2AO.org, Makers, the Makers Competition, and more. Okay, all you Facebook crowd, thanks for the show today. Appreciate you joining me. As always, if you would like and share before you leave, I'd love that. If you would like and follow the show page, I would love that. If you would rain dollar bills on me from the sky, I would love that. Go ahead and check it out. You can join my Patreon to help support the show. Become a member of the Common Sense Corps. That's right, Common Sense Corps. It puts beer in my mug and shoes on my kids' feet. Those kids are big now. It's a lot of shoes. We will see you on Monday, my friends. Have a great weekend.
Shed our terrestrial radio skin, and now we are slimy lizard internet people. It's the Michael Duke Show.